Love paying shipping and delivery fees just to wait weeks for your package? We didn't think so. That's why Lowe's delivers fast and free. All MyLowe's rewards and MyLowe's Pro Rewards members enjoy free delivery and free same-day delivery on eligible orders. Yep, you heard right. Same day, too. That's just another way members get more at Lowe's. Same day applies to orders over $25. Subject to availability. Restrictions and terms at lowes.com/shipping terms.
Hi, everyone. It's Gavin J, the best thing since sand. And you're listening to the Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I'll be talking to Sarah Templeton, who is a passionate advocate for adolescents and adults with either unrecognized or late diagnosed ADHD. She's a managing director and lead therapist of Headstuff ADHD Therapy, which is the biggest team of ADHD diagnosed counsellors in the UK. Sarah, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm extremely well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you for taking the time. I'm sure, well, I know you're busy anyway, you know.
I'm busy, but I always got time to talk about ADHD.
Excellent, and that's what we're going to do. Sarah, tell us a bit more about yourself, firstly, and your background, and how you kind of got to where you are right now.
Okay, it is a bit of a weird story. I'd gaily gone along in life until I was nearly 52, just literally a couple of months off my 52nd birthday. Went to see a counsellor about a cat phobia. I had a terrible, terrible cat phobia. Went to see this lady, and on session three, when I was going through my issues, session one I'd filled up with my issues, session two I'd filled up with more issues, session three I was going through more issues, and I actually said to her, oh, and by the way, I'm diagnosed with IBS. And she said, IBS as well? And I said, yes, diagnosed officially, properly. And that was when she said, has anybody ever suggested your ADHD? And I looked at her like she was an alien. And I literally raised eyebrows and I said, no, why? And she said, because I think you are. Go home and Google it. So I literally did, went home, literally Googled it. And it's really not an underestimation to say that night, my entire life suddenly made sense. Everything. It was one thing after another, 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 another. So people say, was it a light bulb moment? It was about 200 light bulb moments. It was off the scale how it explained me. And literally every trait I went to the next one, I thought, oh my God, oh my God. You know, it was things like, do you always think you know best? Do you always want things your own way? Does the world move too slowly for you? Do you feel like you're, this was the killer one. Do you feel like you're driven by an internal motor? Now, I've never been able to explain that feeling to anybody, but I massively did feel driven by an internal motor. I felt I had this motor that just would not stop. So whatever I was doing, it was never enough. I used to volunteer, excuse me, a lot with offenders, homeless, in addiction, that sort of world. And I was passionate about it, but it was never enough. I was always volunteering for another charity, looking for another charity, looking for more people that I could help. And it was kind of never enough. So when I read that expression, do you feel like you're driven by an internal motor? I could have wept because that was putting into words how I'd been for 51 years, but I didn't know it had a name. You know, and it was just literally trait after trait after trait. Do you interrupt people? Do you think you know best about things? Do you take over what other people are doing? Do you make impulsive decisions? Are you compulsive? And at the time, I was a big compulsive eater and a big compulsive shopper. I spent money like water and used to eat and eat and eat until I actually felt ill and I still couldn't stop eating. And I could never understand why I did that. So there were literally 150, 200 things that I read that night that made sense of my 51 years. And then that same year, 2015, the same year that I was diagnosed with ADHD, I also qualified as a counsellor. So when I put on my brand new website, you know, all about what I did and everything, I put one page on there about adult ADHD, thinking, well, I might meet one or two people with ADHD. I don't know. I don't think I've ever met one, but I might meet one. And from that day to this, we've gone from just me on my own saying, I've got ADHD, to now we are the biggest team of ADHD diagnosed therapists in the UK, which is just mind-blowing. There's about 80 of us at the moment, but we're still growing. We've got trainees that are training to come and work for us. There's about five of them. And I'm very, very, very passionate now about helping. There's several categories I'm very passionate about helping. One is people like me. who've gone around annoying people quite a lot of the time, because we can be very effervescent, we can be very forceful, very funny, usually. We're usually the clown of the class and very entertaining, but we can be too much for some people. And I know in the past I have been too much for some people. I know that. You know, people have said, turn it down, love. Just turn it down a bit. So that I'm very passionate about those people, people that have kind of lived a life and not quite fitted in and not quite understood why they annoy some people and not understand why they've lost friends and things like that. And that was very much me. I'm also very passionate about children and schools, because through no fault of their own, the teachers are not trained in this. You know, the teachers are not trained in ADHD, how to spot it, nor how to manage it. And it's not their fault. It's not included in their training. So I'm very passionate about getting that changed, because most teachers, the vast majority, are desperate to know. You know, they, if they've read the NHS website, they'll see, still see that it's a behavioural disorder. So therefore, they think they need to knock that behaviour out of ADHD kids. They don't. You can't knock it out. It's a brain wiring, very akin to autism. It's not on the autistic spectrum, ADHD, but it's like autism in that it's a different brain wiring. So you can't knock the ADHD out of a child. You can't turn them not ADHD. What you can do is learn about the traits and learn about their way of thinking and work with it rather than clash with it constantly. So I'm very passionate about teachers. And then the other group that I'm very passionate about, excuse me, as I said, I used to work with the homeless, with offenders, and particularly young offenders, and in addiction. And in those fields, ADHD is rife, absolutely rife. Now, it's rife in the homeless world because ADHD people can't remember to pay their bills. They struggle to keep their tenancies. They struggle to stay in one place because they get restless and want to move on. So the homeless world is chock-a-block with ADHD. Addiction and ADHD go hand in hand because of the compulsive element of the brain. So our brain doesn't have enough dopamine. So the brain is constantly looking for excitement, for adrenaline, for the buzz. And it often gets that through alcohol, through drugs, through gambling, through anything fast. So, you know, bungee jumping or motocross or racing, driving, anything fast that gives you the adrenaline, the buzz. And then the other category are offenders. Now, this is my particular passion, because especially young offenders, nearly all of them in prison are ADHD, nearly the whole lot. You know, it's probably, honestly, it's, well, one mental health nurse I know who's worked in the prison system for 20 years, she says it's 85% of the prison population are ADHD. 85%. She's 85%, and she's a mental health nurse. So, and I would, you know, I've always said it's more of them than not. It's well over 50%, well over. And they are in prison because of all these other ADHD traits. So, other ADHD traits are impulsivity, not thinking of the consequences. Now, that is a massive one. An ADHD brain does not naturally think of the consequences of anything. And that's why a lot of boys are in prison, because they just didn't think it through. You know, they thought, oh,
it's a reaction. It sounds like a reaction, yeah. Basically.
Yeah, if I just do that job, you know, get a bit of money, that'll be the end of that. They don't think, oh, and that might mean 5 years in prison. It doesn't come into their head. So not thinking of the consequences is huge. But another couple of massive ADHD traits that get people put in prison is risk-taking, thrill-seeking, and pushing boundaries, and not liking being told what to do and always thinking we know best. So you put that lot together, it's not hard to see why teenagers who think they know best, don't think of the consequences, are impulsive. It's not hard to see why they end up in prison. You know, they're all in there for daft things. They're all in there for criminal damage, kicking off. Stealing, because ADHD people, if we want something, we want it now. We don't want to wait. So if you've got a 13-year-old who wants new trainers, he wants them now. He doesn't want to wait till Christmas or his birthday. He wants them now. So a lot of young offenders get into trouble very easily and quickly in their very, very early teens if they've got undiagnosed ADHD. And I've worked... Excuse me. I've worked in four prisons in total. Two of them were also young offender institutes. So I've worked with a lot of young offenders, and I would, of all the clients I've worked with, it's literally been 8 or 9 out of 10 are ADHD. But the interesting thing is half of those were diagnosed as kids and the other half don't even know they've got it. That's the important thing.
And that's where base. And to be fair, you've mentioned quite a lot anyway. But that was leading to one of my questions, which was, you know, how can it be detrimental to somebody's health if they have undiagnosed ADHD? Well, from what I've heard so far, if it's been undiagnosed, that means there's no way of trying to at least support the person with it. And worst case scenario is they can end up in prison. That sounds like one of the 100%. Elements.
Well, the worst case scenario, actually, I don't want to, I'll be brief on this. I don't want to bring the entire tone of the show down. But the worst case scenario is dead, because people with ADHD have a much higher risk of self-harm and suicide, a much higher risk.
Gosh, right.
Now,
right.
That, as I said, I don't want to bring it down, you know, for too long, but it is important that we say that, because one of the biggest element of ADHD, now they used to think it was inattention, hyperactivity, distraction, and impulsivity. They thought it was the big four, yeah? It's not. It must be coming up 2 or 3 years ago now. There was a big medical paper released in the ADHD world, and they've now begun to realise that the biggest impact of ADHD on a person isn't those big four. It's not the distraction and the hyperactivity and all that guff. It's not. It's actually emotional dysregulation. So ADHD people cannot regulate their emotions. So this goes right across the board, is all emotions. So it means why often girls, not always, I mean, I'm going to generalize a bit here, but there's exceptions to all these rules. Often girls in their teens get very emotional. They can't regulate their emotions. They get very, I used to be called overly dramatic, a drama queen, overly sensitive. I was called all that in my teens because I used to react too strongly to things, you know, things would upset me. I could almost cry at TV commercials. I can cry at a piece of music. You know, things would make me cry. And if you do actually get boys who are like that, but it's mostly girls. Most of the boys, how it affects them, the emotional dysregulation, is they can't rein their anger in. And when you add into boys in their teens, the testosterone and the fact that ADHD is connected to hormones, and in puberty anyway, any child is going through puberty, hormones jangling around their body, blah, blah, blah. You know, puberty is difficult enough. You add in ADHD to it and it gets way worse.
Emotionally, it must be like a nightmare.
It's constant, honestly. I can see it all now, but when I look back, I used to be literally sitting in a chair. This was when I was kind of in my 20s. A lot this happened in my 20s. I'd be sitting in a chair feeling perfectly happy, and then suddenly I'd feel utterly depressed, and I would have no idea why. And I'd be sitting there thinking, what's happened? Why do I suddenly feel as miserable as sin? You know, and I couldn't work it out. And then within half an hour, I'd be sometimes feeling quite euphoric and quite happy. And I think, what's happened now? Why am I feeling... And I never knew why. But now I look back, I think, oh, God, it's so obvious. Emotional dysregulation. But when you're having it, you don't know. Now, that emotional dysregulation at its most extreme can lead to self-harm and suicide, both of which there's a higher rate of with undiagnosed and unmedicated ADHD. When you medicate the ADHD, that puts you back on a level playing field with neurotypical people. So I always say, you know, ADHD on the whole brings with it a lot of positives. So there's a lot of very famous people with ADHD because we have drive, we have commitment, we also have more compassion, we care about people a lot. So ADHD people, they'll always have something they're passionate about. With me, it's kind of always been marginalized members of society, people that have been shoved out, people that are thought less of. You know, I've never thought less of them. I've always thought that I'm absolutely equal to them. And I don't care whether they're a heroin addict or they're, you know, they've been in prison 10 years. It doesn't matter to me. That doesn't, for me, doesn't reflect on the person. I'm interested in the person, not the circumstances surrounding them. But there are some ADHD people who are very passionate with animals, you know, or refugees. There's somebody I know does enormous amounts of work with refugees. So we'll always have some sort of passion and compassion for something. Because that's part of our emotions. We're very emotional people. But as I say, the emotions, it can take you in very good ways. I've done 30 years of volunteering with homeless and addiction and offenders. You know, it's done me good. But I will say, when I was counselling young offenders, particularly in Portland, HMP Portland in Dorset, I would come out, get in my car, put the radio on, and if a certain piece of music came on, I would literally pull over and sob. Because the stories that I just heard in the prison, broke my heart for these boys, you know, that they weren't what you'd call bad boys. They weren't evil boys. They were silly boys who hadn't thought of the consequence. I'll give you a very good example. There was one boy who was in there for stealing over 1,000 cars. A thousand cars, I swear to you, yeah.
Gosh.
So one day when I was chatting to him, he was a long term, I did it for a few sessions, but I said to him, I said, be honest with me. I said, when you were just about to steal car 1,000, I said, did it enter your head that this might not be a good idea and you might end up back in here? Did it enter your head at all? And he thought about it. He really thought. And he said, no, Sarah, no, honestly, no. I did. He said, because I walked past, he said, I tried the handle like I did on every car. He said it was open. He said, and then I opened the door and he said, the keys were in the ignition. What was I supposed to do?
Oh, you
know, that was his, like, yeah. You know, well, of course I had to steal it, you know. And I said, you didn't sort of think of the consequence, maybe? He said, no, honestly, no, no. Because the buzz of finding that door open and then the buzz of seeing the keys, his brain was just going, yippee, yippee. And he wasn't thinking this might lead to me being back in HMP Portland. It didn't enter his head.
Oh, dear. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, Sarah, what have been the benefits to your own health since diagnosis?
Oh, huge. Well, for starters, I can relax now. I'm on the medication. I'm only on, there's two sorts of medication with ADHD, stimulant and non-stimulant. I won't go into it because it's a very big area all on its own. I can't tolerate the stimulants and a lot of people can't, but I'm on the non-stimulant, but it does work extremely well for me. So what it does is it allows me to relax. Before I was medicated, I always used to say to myself, I'll only relax when I'm dead, because I didn't know what this internal motor thing was, you know, but I don't have the internal motor now. It's gone. Because of the medication. So I can now look at something and think, yeah, I'll do that tomorrow or maybe the next day. I don't have to do everything now, like I used to. So I can relax. That's the biggest thing. The second biggest thing, health-wise, is it stopped my binge eating. Stopped it. Completely dead. Now I will just eat something nice, and I might have more than the average person because it's really nice, but I will never binge like I used to binge. I wasn't a frequent binger, but when I binged, it was bad. It was bad so that my skin would hurt because I put so much food in. My body was literally painful and I couldn't stop. But I tell you what's interesting. I only found out afterwards that it's because of the compulsivity element of the brain. So if you go to a wedding or a christening or a whatever, and there's a buffet, I used to say to people, I'm fine if I don't go to it. If I put nothing in my mouth, I'm absolutely fine. I can sit there for hours. But the minute I've put one thing in, that's it, gone. I'm literally hoovering up the table. I could never understand that about myself. But now I understand it's the compulsivity of the brain. As soon as I've given my brain one Vol-au-Vent, my brain was going, that's lovely. I want more Vol-au-Vents. It's almost like the Vol-au-Vent was heroin. If you imagine it's, you know, like a drug. So you've given it a sniff of that lovely whatever. And it wants more and more. It won't let up. So that's gone now. I have complete control over what I eat. I never really was a big drinker before, but I don't drink at all now. Drink doesn't interest me.
So basically, when someone with ADHD comes across something which basically heightens their adrenaline rush, gives them a real high, instantly there's some level of addiction. And the person, I'm guessing, will just completely go for it. And like you say, they might binge or look for it constantly. And this might be linked to drug use. Is that something?
Oh, massively linked to drug use. Massively.
Okay. Right.
The vast majority of people with addiction are ADHD and don't know it. And I say we have many, many addiction therapists on our team who are ADHD themselves and who were addicts themselves. And they've now realized they're medicated. And the wonderful thing about ADHD medication is, as soon as you start to take it, I'll give you the two examples, and they're both alcohol. I'll just combine them. But two people I know who were major problem drinkers, and it split up families and lost them jobs and all sorts of things. Big, big problem drinkers. Both of them said to me after about a fortnight of being on the meds, Sarah, I want to have a word with you. And I'd be like, what? And they said, I've stopped drinking. I'm not even drinking. And I'd be like, well, is that a bad thing? They say, no, it's a good thing. But I didn't even decide to do that. That just happened. So it's not even a conscious thing. You know, as soon as you replace the dopamine that's missing, suddenly whatever your coping strategy was, and the common ones, the biggest one is alcohol, because obviously alcohol is legal. So the biggest one's alcohol, but very closely followed by drugs, very closely followed by gambling, very closely followed by shopping. Food is a big one, again, because it's legal. But also things like hoarding. So some people are just compulsive hoarders. They can't stop buying things. I've had people that I've worked with in the homeless world who've been actually evicted from their homeless hostels because they've hoarded so much. Their actual room has become a fire hazard because they just cannot stop compulsively hoarding. So the compulsivity comes out in loads of different ways. The two safest actually are food and shopping. They do the least damage. But there's a lot of bankrupt ADHD people out there.
I remember working with a community mental health team some years ago, and we visited a lady who was diagnosed with bipolar. And in her high state, because just for our listeners, bipolar means you can end up going for very, very low states and you end up going for very, very high states.
Yeah.
And in her high state, she would go out and buy shoes. And I mean, and not like your average, you know, lady or woman, you know, woman, lady, they love, you know, a bit, I know women love shoes and pan bags and, you know, all the rest of it, but she'd go out and she would really buy shoes, like a lot. So basically, this was one of my questions I was going to come across a bit later, but are there other conditions linked to ADHD? Because it sounds like there's some common traits.
Yes, absolutely. It's interesting because there are conditions that are mistaken for ADHD a lot. And then there are what's called comorbidities/coexisting conditions. So if we do the ones that ADHD is mistaken for most, you've hit on one of them already, bipolar. So a lot of people are misdiagnosed with bipolar, especially people that have been diagnosed 20, 30 years ago as adults. They were not being diagnosed with ADHD because ADHD has only been diagnosed in adults in this country since 2009. So for the last 13 years. So you've got these lovely ladies who are in their 50s and 60s who say, oh, I've been on bipolar meds for 30 years. And then you tell them what the ADHD traits, and they're going, well, that's me. But 30 years ago, they weren't diagnosing adults with ADHD. So there's a lot of people with a bipolar diagnosis that isn't correct. The other one, the big one, is what used to be called borderline personality disorder and is now emotionally unstable personality
disorder. What? I was actually thinking about that at the beginning, but I didn't want to interrupt you and I didn't want to think, okay, am I going to get myself really mixed up here? But when you were talking at the beginning about like impulsivity, not thinking about consequences and all the rest of it, in my brain, I thought, oh, that sounds like borderline personality disorder.
No, there are a tiny percentage of ADHD people who've also got EUPD, but it's tiny. Much more common is that it's a misdiagnosis. And we spend a lot of time with people that are, you know, they've diagnosed EUPD, they've been put on quetiapine, the antipsychotics, blah, blah, and it's not, it's ADHD. So there's those two, they're the most common two misdiagnoses. Yeah. Very occasionally you'll get schizophrenia, very, very occasionally, not very often. And very occasionally, there's a lot of women walking around, especially women, who think they've got OCD and they haven't. It's ADHD. They've got these are all ADHD traits. They've got overthinking, ruminating, very, very conscious about germs or things being in the right order or, you know, whatever. And they think they've got OCD. Actually, they haven't. They've got ADHD. And it comes from the ADHD anxiety, overthinking, ruminating. And that can very easily tip over into OCD. So I've met numerous women who go, oh, my husband's ADHD and I've got OCD. No, every single one of those has had ADHD.
I can see how people can be misdiagnosed, though, because it is very tricky, isn't it? There's a fine line between some
there
of the conditions.
There kind of is, but when you know, the other one that people get very misdiagnosed with is complex PTSD or PTSD. People think, oh, I've got this, I've got that. But I'm diagnosed with both, actually. There's no secret there. I've got diagnosed moderate to severe ADHD. And a few years ago, I got a diagnosis of complex PTSD, which it doesn't go back to anything awful. It goes back to my dad died when I was very young. Wow. And apparently my brain had never processed it. So that was the PTSD. But the traits of PTSD are very different to ADHD. So, but there are medics, shall we say, who don't know enough to differentiate between the two. But a lot of people with ADHD have had trauma in their childhood, because a lot of people with ADHD have had parents who were alcoholics, who were drug addicts, who were violent, who were in and out of prison, or led chaotic lives. Because of the undiagnosed ADHD, therefore the children have had trauma in their lives. So when they're growing up, a lot of people think, oh, it's trauma, it's PTSD. No, it's not. They're ADHD as well.
But this goes back to my point. You're saying that medics find it difficult to diagnose sometimes, and people can be misdiagnosed.
Yes.
And it almost sounds like you can only really, it probably be more likely, more reliable to depend on someone that actually has ADHD to diagnose, because they're going to know.
Funny you say that.
Yeah.
Funny you say that, because all the psychiatrists that we work with, we've worked very, very closely with three over the years, and all three are diagnosed ADHD.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
because of that situation where, and it's not nice, is it? You know, someone's misdiagnosed and then they believe that, and then they go on for the rest of their lives like believing that.
Yeah,
when actually you know, they're not, or they are. I don't know.
Misdiagnosis is actually it's a big subject, and I'm very passionate about it. I've seen people misdiagnosed who have been put on antipsychotic medication and then started self-harming and then become suicidal because they've been misdiagnosed on the wrong meds. So it's a big problem, misdiagnosis.
Oh, gosh, that's huge.
I've met people, I promise you, that have only started to self-harm when they're put on the antipsychotics because they've been misdiagnosed EUPD when it's actually ADHD. So we're very passionate about mental health in my team and getting the right diagnosis, whether that's ADHD or not, you know, whether it is, or whether you genuinely have got that comorbidity of EUPD. I've met two people in my life. I've met thousands of ADHD people, but I've only met two who've genuinely got ADHD and EUPD, genuinely. The rest are all misdiagnosed. So, you know, but misdiagnosis is a whole big subject on its own, but there's a lot of it in this country. And the worst thing is psychiatrists who are not trained in ADHD and think they know about ADHD, they're the dangerous ones, because they're the ones who go, no, you've got bipolar, or no, you've got EUPD, or no, you've got sometimes schizophrenia, sometimes psychosis. Now, this is an interesting one. I've had two clients with quite severe psychosis in my time, and both of them, it was because they were ADHD, but they weren't self-medicating. So actually self-medicating, so me with my shopping and my food, other people with their alcohol and their drugs, other people with their gambling and their hoarding, actually what you're doing there is self-medicating your ADHD brain. People that don't do any of that, and I had a client many years ago who was a boy in his mid-20s, and he wasn't doing any of that. He didn't eat lots, he didn't do drugs, he didn't drink, he didn't do shopping. But actually what happens then is the ADHD can make you quite mentally unwell. And he had started to hear voices. He'd started to think he was going to be abducted by aliens. He really had gone quite mentally unwell because he wasn't self-medicating. And I spoke to a couple of psychiatrists. I happened to bump into at the Houses of Parliament. A bit of a name drop there. I do. I go on the APPG for ADHD at the Houses of Parliament because I'm passionate about change. Happened to find two psychiatrists sitting at a table one day, and I said, "Oh, well, I've got you two boys together. Can I just ask you a question?" And I said, "If you don't self-medicate your ADHD in any way, can it make you very mentally unwell?" And they said, "Absolutely, 100%. Because basically the ADHD turns in on itself. So if you've got no outlet for it, you know, through your cake or your biscuits or your Coke or your drink or whatever, it will turn in on itself. And then it can make you quite mentally unwell. So ironically, self-medicating is the safer thing to do."
Gosh, that is...
Yeah.
Thank you for the insight. I mean, there's loads going on there. We're just going to go to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
So Sarah, what are some of the main problems adults with ADHD run into?
Okay. Okay. So the big one, addiction, is the big one. Everybody tries to swerve addiction. Obesity is another big one. If you've got, if you ever see anybody who's got 30 stone plus, nearly always it's ADHD. One of my friends was 33 stone, and then we got her diagnosed, and she's now down to 13. You know,
oh gosh, so obesity.
Obesity is a big one. Addiction is another one. Promiscuity is another one. Now, even when people are happily either married, I've had clients who've been very, very happily married and, you know, been married for 20, 25 years and absolutely love their wife. But, and it's always been men that I've worked with, but I'm sure this is the same for women, but they still can't help loving that buzz, that excitement, the newness, the excitement of meeting somebody else. And I've literally, as a counsellor, you know, I've worked with people who've been crippled by their own behaviour. They hate themselves so much for doing what they've done because they love this person so much. But the thrill is, it's very, very difficult to rein it in. So promiscuity is a big one that causes people a lot of angst and heartache because they just can't rein it in. Spending money is another one. Most ADHD people have got terrible credit ratings. They've either been bankrupt, they've been in voluntary arrangements, they're tens of thousands of pounds in debt because they find it very difficult to manage money. You know, if they've got money, it kind of burns a hole in their pocket till they've spent it on something lovely and shiny and new. We do love shiny, bright new things. So money and ADHD is a big problem. And also, keeping anything long term. The house I'm living in now is the only house, and now bearing in mind I'm 59, this is the only house I've lived in knowing I'm not going to move. Every other property I've lived in, and we must be talking well over 20 in my time.
20?
At least, probably nearer 30. As soon as I moved in, I wanted to move out. You know, as soon as I moved in, all I could see was, well, that's wrong. I don't want to be here. That's wrong. That's not right. I don't want to be here. Don't want to be here. So doing anything long term is a problem for a lot of ADHD people, including jobs. So a lot of ADHD people are self-employed because they don't like working for other people. They don't like being told what to do. They always think they know best and they want everything their own way. So we're not great at working for other people. The only time we're good at working for other people is when we really respect them, when we really, really respect them and they respect us. And if they treat us well, respect us, we will respect them back. But ultimately, the vast majority of ADHD people are self-employed, loads and loads. They say all entrepreneurs are ADHD. It's either all or if not most. But that's the biggest kind of problem. So that the obesity, the addiction, money problems, relationship problems, that's where ADHD people usually hit most problems.
Excuse me, I'm just sneezing there.
Bless you.
Thank you very much. It's very interesting what you're saying because there's a lot of things I wasn't aware of, I'll be honest. Mm. I know a bit about ADHD and I've worked a bit with ADHD people before, but the amount of information, just some of the traits and hearing about, you know, people unfortunately ending up in prison or homeless and maybe in relationships which are breaking down. Mm. It's interesting to hear how the traits that they experience make that as an outcome. It's quite shocking as well. Like prison, for example, 85% of people may well be have ADHD, and it's like, gosh, and again, it reflects, you know, how well were they managed and supported when they were growing up. But that's my point. Yeah. It sounds like it doesn't sound. And also, there's an issue with diagnosis as well. Anyway, so massive, a lot of people have gone underneath the radar.
Yeah, massive issue with diagnosis. And there's a massive misconception about what ADHD is. That's the first thing. You know, there are so many people still, and I count myself in that number. You know, when that counsellor said to me, has anybody ever suggested you're ADHD? I honestly thought ADHD was 9-year-old boys chucking chairs at teachers. I just thought it was little boys. I didn't know it was grown-up 51-year-old women. You know, it didn't make any sense to me at all. So I count myself massively in that number who are very misinformed about what ADHD is. I'm not now because I'm 7 years into it now and I've done nothing but live it, eat it, breathe it, work with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of gorgeous teenagers, adults, offenders, addicts, homeless. I've worked with a whole lot of them, you know, and I love them all. I love them all. But they've all, not one ADHD person hasn't hit problems. Not one. They will have hit problems with addiction. They'll have hit problems with money. They'll have hit problems with work. You know, there will always be problems somewhere along the lines. However, I always say that ADHD, on the whole, people are positive. It's a very positive thing to have because we're very driven. We're very caring. The top job, for example, for ADHD people is paramedic. We make brilliant paramedics because when anybody's brain is flooded with adrenaline, so let's terrible car road accident, yeah, terrible, terrible one. A normal person's brain, a neurotypical brain, when it gets flooded with adrenaline, it freezes. Ours doesn't. The more adrenaline
because
we
more
get,
active, it becomes more active. We
can see things very clearly. And I've done this. I've done a lot of work with crisis at Christmas. And often at crisis at Christmas, somebody will kick off, you know, there'll be some incident. And usually I see all these hundreds of people running away from something. And as they're running away, I'm walking towards it because I know I can deal with it, whatever it is, you know, because I'm very good in a crisis. I can see things clear, very good in a crisis, at crisis. So I can see things very clearly. So that's why we make fantastic paramedics.
Can I ask you a question, Sarah? Let's say everything is going, you're having a lovely day. Everything's perfect outside. Everything's fine. Are you overthinking about stuff and worrying about stuff until something happens, which is a crisis or there's something you need to focus on? And then all of a sudden you're like, hold on. Okay. No, I'm fine. Okay. Let me focus on this now. Or am I getting this completely wrong? Or do some people experience that or not? I can repeat myself if you like.
Well, it's interesting. See, when you're off the meds and on the meds, it's very different. When you're not on meds, your brain is firing thoughts constantly, constantly, constantly. So they say that our brain's a bit like spaghetti junction, yeah? So it's firing, 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 firing thoughts constantly. But when you're on the meds, that calms down a lot. Even the ones I'm on, the mild ones that I'm on, it calms down a lot. So it's not that we're not thinking. Our brains are still more active than other people's. I know this because when I've taken the stimulant meds, I now know what it feels like to have a normal brain, to have an empty brain with no thoughts. I've experienced that. It's not my brain. My brain's on the go, thinking, constantly thinking, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen? But it's just that when our brain gets flooded with that adrenaline, whether it's a car accident or whether it's, I don't know, a child in trouble or whatever, we will spring to action and be much more useful in a crisis than anybody else. So it's not just paramedics. The second top job for ADHD people is chef, because we're very creative. We know 2 days are the same. It's very dramatic. Everything's got to be done. Everything's got to be ready at the same time. There's, you know, drama, drama, drama. So we love anything where there's drama and excitement. I've had a lot of clients who are actually firemen. Firemen is a very big job for ADHD people, and a lot of police. This is the interesting thing, because I'm so passionate about all these offenders in prison and getting them diagnosed and getting them out of the prisons, basically. And our biggest advocates and the most wonderful help we've had is from the police, because the police realise that all these kids that they're arresting, they know they're ADHD.
Right.
And the funny thing is, some of the police, a lot of the police are, because they're drawn to that because it's an exciting job. It's a caring job where you're trying to help people, keep people safe. No 2 days are the same. So I did a presentation a couple of weeks ago to 440 police officers, and they were there officially to learn about the offenders who were ADHD. But during that session, we found out an awful lot of those police officers also had ADHD, and they care. And a lot of them have said, you know, we realise we've got the same traits as these people that we're arresting. It's just that we can kind of rein it in and manage it and, you know, tone it down a bit. And some of these others aren't quite so good at managing it. And like you said before, you're bang on right when you said that they haven't been supported. So often these kids that end up in prison, a lot of them, I hate to say it, but it's true, a lot of them come from the care system, which is really, really tragic. I've worked with lots of people in prison who've come from the care system. The rest of them, I'd say 99% of them come from chaotic homes.
They're either chaotic because the parents are alcoholic very often, the parents are drug addicts.
Yeah, Sarah. No, absolutely. No, gosh, there's so much. I feel like we need to do another show on ADHD, to be honest with you.
As much as you like. I'm so passionate about it. I'm so passionate about raising awareness, because the people that, I mean, I hate that blooming phrase, raising awareness. It sounds so bland and boring, but it really is truly about raising awareness of what ADHD is and the impact that it can have. And also the amazing validation and how you see yourself when you're diagnosed is just amazing. Because all, this is an interesting fact for you. Up until the age of 12, right, 12, an undiagnosed ADHD person is reckoned to have received 20,000 negative messages. Yeah.
20,000.
20,000 negative messages. And those negative messages are things like sit still, stop fidgeting, focus, concentrate, stop doodling, stop twiddling, stop shaking your leg, stop being impulsive, don't run across the road. It's constant, constant because of our, you know, because of our traits. So when you're not diagnosed, you're getting constantly rained down with all this negativity. And I had it, you know, I'm 59, but I can remember as a child being told these phrases over and over again. If anyone's going to knock it over, it will be you. Why do you have to do everything in such a tearing hurry? Why does everything have to be your way? You know, they're phrases that I was hearing 40 years ago, and they stick with you. So this is why I'm passionate about raising awareness, you know, that people should know it's not, you're not a pain in the neck. That is just you, that you are just going to need to fiddle to keep, you know, because by keeping something moving, it calms our brain. If you ask an ADHD person to sit stock still, they will get agitated very quickly. They have to keep something moving to keep their brain stimulated, and then they can concentrate. So all these kids that are getting these 20,000 negative messages, it's horrible. I want them to be recognised earlier, not at 50 blooming one like me. I want them to be recognised when they're 5, 6, 7, so that they get the right help. And they get, you see, the other thing with ADHD, this is a very important thing. 80% of people with ADHD haven't only got ADHD, they've got another coexisting condition. And 50% of ADHD people have got two. So when I was diagnosed, two or more, I should say. So when I was diagnosed at 51, I was diagnosed moderate to severe combined ADHD, and I thought that was the end of it. But then I was working with clients and they were talking about dyspraxia and dyscalculia and all these other things. And I thought, my God, this is me. I do all this. I drop my dinner down my tea every night. Down my top every night. I'm constantly falling over. I'm constantly bruised. I don't know why. I broke a finger and I had no idea how I'd done it. And I'm now diagnosed with severe dyspraxia, but I got myself diagnosed with that. So this is another kind of piece of the jigsaw. Once you get your ADHD diagnosis, it's just the beginning. Then you've got to find out what else you've got that goes with it, because literally 80% of people have got one more.
Basically, what kind of support can we've got? I mean, we've got a few minutes left, and it'd be fantastic just to hear what kind of support is out there for people that, you know, have been diagnosed or are not sure if they've got it or not.
There's support groups. There's support groups. I mean, we've got one in Buckinghamshire, for example. We've got 400 members of it. It's a once a month thing. There are lots of others springing up around the country. So if you sort of Google ADHD support group, you'll find them. They're in London, they're in Manchester, they're in Birmingham. I know where there's lots of them dotted around the country. So there's physical ADHD support groups for starters, and you'll get tons of information and advice and support of those, loads of it. Equally online, there's a lot of very good Facebook groups. The biggest one in England, I think it is about 12,500 members now. So if you go onto Facebook and put, you know, ADHD support, tons and tons of it will come up. Then there's books. I've written one. I wrote one purely to help parents because I was saying the same thing to parents over and over again. So I wrote a book to help parents understand their ADHD kids' brains. And the second version of that is coming out soon, which is for teachers, because a lot of the parents were giving that book to their kids' teachers saying, this is what he's got. He's not a little brat. And, you know, you're never going to change him. This is how his brain works. So because they were all giving the book to the teachers, I've rewritten it for teachers now. So there's a lot of books out there. There's mine. There's dozens of others. So if you think you've got it, there's loads and loads of books that you can buy. But there's support everywhere. There's support online. There's support face to face. And that's getting better. They're growing and growing and growing because so many more people are getting diagnosed.
Are you on social media? Can people reach out to you as well at all?
100%. We've got Headstuff. My company's called Headstuff ADHD Therapy. We've got open groups, you know, for people that can come on there and chat about whether they think they might have the condition and is this trait ADHD, is it not? And you'll get support. So there's, yes, Headstuff, we've got support. If anybody goes onto our website, we've got Headstuff ADHD Therapy and Headstuff ADHD Liberty. Headstuff ADHD Liberty, we focus on keeping people out of prison and away from addiction. So that company does that. But on both of those websites, there's the support group. There's all the details of our support group. So start on my website if you want to, and that will kind of lead you off in other directions. But there is a lot of support now. 7 years ago when I was diagnosed, there was a lot less. There was Facebook groups. I could find the Facebook groups, but that was it. But now there's a lot more of these face-to-face support groups going on because people are setting them up all over the country, which is terrific.
Sarah, thanks so much for your time today. I think it's been brilliant. A lot of information there for our listeners. And for me as well, I've learned a lot. You know, just from listening to what you, you know, a lot of things that you've said. And thanks for offering, you know, links to where people can find you as well. Okay.
Great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And thanks to our listeners. You know, you can find me on Instagram at GavinJ417. Until next time, take care.